We're back with another episode of the Journey to Diagnosis series, diagnostic stories and struggles from autoimmune encephalitis patients. On this episode, HESA Vice President Maddie Bomey interviews HESA co-founder and executive director Susan Foley, who has a form of autoimmune encephalitis called Hashimoto's encephalopathy. My name is Maddie Bomey, and I am Vice President of HESA, a nonprofit that was formed to create awareness, research, and support of people with Hashimoto's encephalopathy and seronegative autoimmune encephalitis. Today, we will be interviewing Susan Foley, who is the co-founder and executive director of HESA, who is also diagnosed with Hashimoto's encephalopathy. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Maddie. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for sitting down with us today. So I just want to hear about your journey and, you know, how your diagnosis of HE led to your involvement in HESA. So start off with the basics. How old were you when you were first diagnosed with HE?
Let's see. Do I want to give my age? No. I was in my mid 50s when I started to get sick. But it was before I was diagnosed. So I would say I was probably 55 when I got diagnosed with HE. But I had a lot of stuff going on before that, that they couldn't figure out. So I was probably sick for a year or so beforehand. And that's how the journey started for me. And actually, it started, I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was bad. I couldn't walk anywhere. I was so tired. I was exhausted.
Wow.
It was strange for me because I'm a person that was never sick ever. Mm-hmm. And so then it led, you know, I still was sick. I was getting these weird autoimmune reactions from the sun, from just everything. And I ended up, I was working one day and talking to a customer, and I looked at her and I thought, I can't talk. I couldn't get the words out of my mouth whatsoever. I'm staring at her thinking, I don't know what to do. And at the same time, I started getting the Ronald's symptoms, I should say, where my hands were turning blue and white and red and, pain in them and blotches all over. I mean, I was a mess, and I guess I just kept going thinking, you know, that was my personality. Just keep going, just work through it. Right.
Yes. So,
but I ended up going to the emergency room a few times because I had like out of body experiences. Like I was floating above myself, looking down at myself. I couldn't talk that time I went in. I thought I had a stroke. Each time I went into the ER, they said it was stress related, which is common for us.
Yes.
The symptoms just kept getting, you know, worse and worse. And, you know, I got diagnosed with first scleroderma, then they changed it to lupus, then they changed it to undifferentiated connective tissue disease. And then they changed that to Sjögren's. And it's just been on and on and on. I've got two hands full of autoimmune diseases diagnosed, some of them very rare. But then I had to ask to go see a neurologist. My primary said you need an antidepressant. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I want to see a neurologist. So she sent me to one, which I absolutely loved her and I still do. And it took her about 9 months to diagnose me. But when she did, she said, I can't believe it. She actually said, you know, I'm sorry that it took me this long to diagnose you, she said, but this all fits together. It's a diagnosis of elimination. So, and I did, I went through every test you could imagine, biopsies and everything to get that diagnosis. So.
Well, that's amazing that she was able to, you know, stick with you and was really determined in finding the cause of your symptoms. I think that's wonderful.
She was amazing.
Yeah. So how long have you been living
with HE? How many years?
11 years.
11 years. Wow. That's amazing. Yep.
11 years. It's been, it's been a journey.
Yeah, I'm sure. I understand. So like when you were diagnosed, what kind of treatments did you start, or what kind of treatments have you done over the course of your 11 years of dealing with this?
Well, of course, I had the standard treatments that people get when they first get diagnosed with the IV preds, high dose, 1,000 milligrams. I got it for 5 days in a row. Instead of getting, like people told me it was going to be, you know, bouncing off the walls, I was exhausted and sleeping all the time. It was just the opposite of what I expected. Then, of course, and it's kind of funny because before I even got diagnosed with HE, I was already on Imuran, which is an immune suppressant. I was on that for other autoimmune diseases that I was told I had. So anyway, so I was already on the Imuran. And so I stayed on the Imuran, and it wasn't quite enough. So then they started Cellcept. That didn't do it. I'm trying to remember all of them. Well, I ended up with IVIG, and methotrexate is another one they had me on, and that didn't do it. So they started me on IVIG. So I've been on IVIG for around 9 years.
Wow.
And yeah, the magic ticket for me is IVIG and Imuran. And every time they try to lower my Imuran, I start having relapses. So it seems to be the magic ticket for me is Imuran 150 milligrams and my IVIG.
And how often do you do IVIG? Once a month or more
often? I found what works for me is to have my IVIG once a week, which sounds like quite a commitment, but it works for me because I don't get after effects. I don't get the headaches. I don't get sick. When I would be getting it 4 days in a row, I would be laid up for a week from severe headaches, and just, I was miserable. Mm-hmm. So I have found for myself that getting it once a week keeps me more on a level, even level, where with IVIG, you get the highs. You first get it, you're kind of sick. Then you get that peak, you get high, you feel really good. Then before the next dose, you start going downhill again. And you can tell you need another round of IVIG. I don't have that. It seems more even. So that's been what works for me.
That's great. Yeah. And I too, I do mine every 2 weeks for that exact reason too, is when I was doing it once a month. It was a lot to process all in one in that giant dose. And I always found myself on this like roller coaster of like the highs and lows, and really getting to the point where I needed that when it was close to getting my dose. But IVIG is awesome.
It has helped me.
Yes. Yeah. So when you were diagnosed, did you have any idea what, you know, Hashimoto's encephalopathy was, or what did you think when you were first diagnosed?
I got to tell you, I was diagnosed and I tried to Google it. There was one article in all of Google, nothing else showed up, one article. And I read it and I'm like, I can't believe I can't find any more information on this. So I went on a site that's called Inspire, and I looked up encephalitis and got into a group situation there. And I found one other person that was diagnosed with HE, one other person, nobody else.
Yeah.
And, and we became friends because it was like, we were the oddities, and we had something in common, that's for sure. So that actually ended up being the co-founder of HESA along with me.
Oh, wow.
Cool. We started the a nonprofit at that point, because we couldn't stand the idea of having other people in the same position that we were in,
yes,
that could not find any information.
Yeah. So you felt pretty kind of, yeah, you felt kind of alone. You were the, you were the zebra in the crowd of horses.
Yeah, I was a zebra, right?
Yeah. But that's awesome that it led you to someone else, amazingly, one other zebra. And then you guys founded HESA. So yeah, you guys, why did you found HESA? What was your goal at the time?
Well, to be quite honest, I was talking to Nick one day, that's the co-founder, Nick Nelson. And I said, I would like to write a book. I said, of patient stories, just patient stories of people who have been diagnosed with AG. And I said, and what gave me the idea is that I had been diagnosed with myositis before AG. And I had bought a book and it was just patient stories. And it really, really helped me a lot because I realized the symptoms I had, I wasn't just being a hypochondriac. It really was true. These people went through the same thing. So I said, I'd like to do a book on that order about AG for other people. Well, as we went on, we formed Facebook groups. We found other people that had HE also, and we did get patient stories, and we did write the first book, and I think it was like 2013, and patient stories was basically the whole nine yards. We had some scientific information in there, but of course, since then it's changed, but yeah, it was quite successful, but we formed HESA then as a nonprofit. Because we were writing that book, that was the first reason we thought we should form the nonprofit. But from that point on, it has just grown and grown. We did the second book in 2016. And I'm going to tell you, it's a feat to try to write a book and have all these patients and everybody that's doing this book are sick with an autoimmune encephalitis.
I'm sure.
It was quite time consuming. It took a lot of energy from these people that were volunteering to help. I'm so thankful to all of them. We wouldn't have been able to do it without them. But the fact that it's amazing to me that all these sick people could get together. And when they were healthy enough, they did their part. When they were ill or relapsing, they stood back and somebody else took over their place. So really rewarding. It really was.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And I actually own the first and second copy of the book when I was diagnosed. My mom bought a copy of the first edition of the book, and that was life-changing for me. And I'm sure for many others that have bought the book and were able to read patient stories, it was life-changing for me to realize I wasn't crazy. And then it was life-changing for my mom, who was my caregiver, because she didn't fully understand that I wasn't totally in control of my behaviors. But after she bought the book and read it, and she came to me and apologized, because she just had a better understanding of what I was dealing with. So I just find it absolutely, it's been life-changing for me, and I'm sure it's been life-changing for so many. So I think that's, and I think it's incredible too, that you guys, you all have HE and you're sick, but you all came together and wrote this book to help others with this. So they weren't the lone zebras in the crowd. So I think that's amazing. Yeah. So what other
hopefully
kind of
in the future? Hopefully in the future that, you know, it'll keep helping people. The scientific information can change, but the patient stories don't. And
absolutely,
that to me helped more than anything.
Yes.
As far as needing to each other. Yeah.
I agree. And so speaking about, you know, forming HESA, and what kind of other things has HESA done since you and Nick founded the nonprofit?
We've done a lot of different things. We actually have two Facebook groups that are quite active. One is just for people diagnosed with HE. The other group is understanding Hashimoto's encephalopathy. So it's for caregivers, the diagnosed people, and people that are in that possibility, I might have HE category, and they're going through the diagnosis process. And having other people that you can talk to and relate to is so important. And we have webinars, or we have several webinars we've had with expert physicians talking. And we've had a symposium that we had in New York City in 2019, which was quite successful. And hopefully we're going to do another one in the next couple of years when COVID calms down. We are doing awareness videos, which is like this one. We did a series of caregivers, because I feel like caregivers do not get, they're like heroes to me, because they do so much, yet, and it takes such a toll on them. But, you know, it just breaks my heart. But anyway, yes. And now we're doing this series on videos on the journey to diagnosis. And I feel it's all important. We've got a lot of things. We've got some PSAs coming up. We've got, I don't know, Maddie, help me out.
I'm trying to think too. It's hard when you have memory issues to recall over the years. We partner with other autoimmune encephalitis nonprofits and have done a World Encephalitis Day event. Yes. And I'm trying to think of other things.
And we also are going to have live meet and greets again. So we're going to hold meetings with people face to face, believe this or not, COVID, stay away.
Right.
In different parts of the country. So yes. The first one's going to be held in Florida. The second one will probably be in New York somewhere. And the third will be in the California region. And hopefully I can have one in the Chicago area.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I would like COVID to calm down, because I've gotten to meet lots of people through these kinds of events. And I miss those people. I want to see them again. Like, I think that's like one of the cool things about, you know, the support groups that you've founded online too, is you can read research papers on HE, and it's not the same as talking to the people who live it 24/7, who have seen, you know, every second of dealing with this, you know, as caregivers, they've seen their loved ones dealing with this. I think it's really hard to understand this disease if you don't live with it yourself, or if you don't care for somebody that is living with it. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that a month ago or so, I know you remember this, but I did just a simple little video of myself talking and how my symptoms and what happened to me. And the members were so excited to get that information to share with their loved ones and their family and friends, because they couldn't explain it.
Yes.
When you have a brain injury, it's very difficult to express what you're thinking. I have a heck of a time, numerous occasions, to get my thoughts out and my words out. And say things that sound intelligent. I mean, they're in my brain intelligent, but they yes. don't come out quite that way.
Yes.
And, I don't even know what made me decide to do this, but I just thought, you know, I just have to help these people so that their loved ones understand a little bit more. And I was really glad that was something that I did that.
Yes.
I'm not and afraid I to think myself out.
Yes. For me, hearing people's stories or hearing other people share their story makes me feel less alone. And I often find myself, you know, symptoms that I thought had nothing to do with HE. Oh, they actually, oh, you experienced that. Me too. I kind of thought it was just me or, you know,
exactly.
It's super helpful. Yes. And in learning to also like ways people cope with, HE to different things well, that they.
And Hessa also has a page that has positive stories on it. So when I hear of a positive story, let's say a patient has been in remission for 5 years or whatever, even for 2 years, I ask them to write a little story. And we post it on this one page that we have on Facebook. And I think that's real important too, to tell people some of the positive stories that things aren't always have to be negative. Something, you know, can happen. But then again, it's also important to tell them some of the things that can happen that aren't very nice. Young children that have died, I mean, from not being diagnosed properly, and or children who have got permanent damage to their brains because somebody wasn't doing the legwork and haven't been diagnosed quick enough. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, but I do too think those stories, do those stories kind of help, you know, fuel your passion to, you know, bring awareness to this disease?
I have to tell you, I have such a passion for it.
Yes.
Probably too much so.
Oh, no.
I'm always thinking that's my problem. I care about everybody that is diagnosed. Everybody has their own hell that they go through with it. But my heart breaks when it's a child.
Mm-hmm.
It breaks when it's a young person. It breaks when it's a mom or a dad that have young children at home that they're trying to take care of. I mean, it's heartbreaking because they can't do the things a person that's not ill can do. They, you know, I think of people your age, Maddie, yeah. You know, young adults, you know, you want to be out and live your life like a normal 24-year-old and have an apartment, a boyfriend and have a job. And, you know, you're stuck with me. But I mean,
I think just like you, being part of HESA has given me a purpose and has helped me bring good out of this really sucky situation.
I've always said that. I've always said it. And actually, my working with HESA and the people has been, in a selfish way, it's been a saving grace for me. I get quite satisfied feeling by helping somebody else out, by helping them find a doctor or help them try to figure out what's going on. It just, you know, it's like a purpose. You have a reason to get up in the morning. There's a purpose. And
absolutely.
When you're an A personality, which I swear everybody that was diagnosed with HE is or was an A personality, it's hard to sit back and not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be capable of holding a job. There's no way, because I wouldn't be able to wake up in the morning and know whether or not I could go, right? Yes. But being the executive director of a nonprofit like this, I can just, and we're all, let me put this in here. None of us are paid. Everybody's volunteer. There's mm-hmm. not one bit of donations or support that comes in that goes into salaries for anyone. It all goes into direct help of people with HE. It goes into awareness. It goes into, our big project coming up, which I forgot to mention. How could I forget this, Maddie? Yeah,
forgot to.
Yeah. My big dream right now is research. And because HE is one of the most, or it is the least researched form of autoimmune encephalitis. It's mm-hmm. like we're under that umbrella that everybody knows with AE, and we're at the very tail end of that umbrella. They don't understand HE. They can't figure out what causes it. They can't figure out what symptoms to look for, truthfully, to diagnose someone. It is a big question mark. Mm-hmm. And there is so much controversy over it. So that has made me be determined to find our own research partner that will do the legwork, do the research on HE, find out what the antibody is that causes it, what testing would need to be done so that there isn't any doubt in people's minds once you're diagnosed, because what it is right now, we're in limbo. It's like,
yes,
where do we belong? Right.
Yes. Yeah.
There's papers out there that basically say we don't exist, that, you know, we are not actually autoimmune encephalitis, which then you have papers that explain it perfectly well, you know, what we have. They don't say why we have it. They don't say what antibody that has been discovered to causes HE, but they acknowledge that we exist. But then we're talking about zebras. We are like double zebra. I mean,
yes, for sure.
And I understand people don't want to, researchers, scientists, pharmaceutical, whatever, you know, there's not enough of us for them to take it on. I don't know how to say it any other way. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not that exciting.
Yes.
But
we're a mystery. So there is more to be discovered, but there's nobody really actively,
not that I know,
looking into it. There's been a lot more research on like TPO antibodies involved in neuroinflammation and what their role is. And, there is a lot of controversy about, if they have any role. But it seems a lot of research papers that I have read, at least, say they have some purpose, at least at indicating inflammation. It may be nonspecific, but it still indicates there is an issue. Something is wrong in the body. So, it's really hard to see, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, to see people debating whether or not it exists and not asking the question of why. Are people with neurological or neuropsychiatric symptoms, why is this showing up in people with those things? You know, I don't think it's very productive to debate whether this is real or not. I want to know why. Exactly. Nobody wants to answer the question why. So
exactly my point, Maddie. Mm-hmm. I get so frustrated and so upset, you know, I'll even ask a doctor that's kind of saying, you know, they don't know where we belong, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, then, you know, what's the answer? You know, we have all these people being diagnosed yet with HE. Mm-hmm. I mean, it hasn't stopped being diagnosed. No. I do agree that I read a paper not too long ago that said they felt that too many people right now were being diagnosed with HE, yes, just yes. because they had high TPO antibodies and or thyroid antibodies. Okay, that I totally would agree with. You know, I'm sure that happens, you know, I'm sure it does.
Yes.
But it's still, the whole point of it is that it still exists. So yes. Whether or not many people are being diagnosed with it or not, the problem is it still exists. And
yes,
I'll get on my soapbox. Like,
no, please do. This
like
needs
I
to
always
be.
Do, but yes. And you know, the diagnosis that they give about help me out here, Maddie, the functional
neurological disorder. Yes, yeah. That's a yes.
Kind
of controversial as well.
I had a 3-hour plane ride with a friend of mine that's a psychiatrist, and she was telling me how frustrated she is that she gets sent patients to her that are clearly have an autoimmune physical problem underneath, and yet yes. They're being sent to her because the doctor thinks they have the, go ahead.
Functional neurological disorder.
Yeah. That's yes. My HE. I can't.
Ever I got you. I got you.
But she was saying she's just so frustrated that, you know, she said, meanwhile, she sends these patients back then after doing the psych exams or the exams that she does and say to the doctors, this patient's has a physical problem, yes. Not a mental issue. And meanwhile, these people, okay, now they've waited. I think she told me, now this was just a few weeks ago, that her next open appointment is August.
Oh,
so
wow.
These patients are waiting that length of time,
yes,
right? 9 months
mm-hmm.
to get in to see her. Then after she tests them and does her thing, they mm-hmm. have to wait another, what? To get into a neurologist, what is
yes.
it? 4 months sometimes?
Can be, or yes.
So meanwhile, if they do have an autoimmune encephalitis, let's say, for example, they're getting permanent brain damage.
Yes.
Because
timing is of the essence with this disease. Yes, for sure.
So they're not being treated. They're not being, you know, and they're just being shoved from one. And then from her, they get shoved again. So I know her frustration was real because I was right there with her.
Yes. It reminds me of my friend Kaylee, who I interviewed. For those listening, they can listen to her story too. It's up on our website. But she got stuck in, you know, the psychiatric side of the system for several years and tried every single, you know, psychiatric therapy, many medications, many, you know, cognitive behavioral. She was inpatient, I think mm-hmm. a couple times and just nothing was getting better. And she was ready to give up because she was tired, you know, of dealing with this and getting no answers and not getting any better. And come to find out later after she got to the right neurologist and they did a lumbar puncture and, you know, blood work and EEG and stuff, that she had LG1 autoimmune encephalitis. And her doctor actually said she estimated that Kaylee had been sick for 8 to 10 years and most likely had permanent damage. Yeah, that's, I still just really, that upsets me a lot. She's my age. She basically lost her 20s, like all of her 20s, because she's been dealing with this. She hasn't been able to function in society. And it just breaks my heart. Like, it shouldn't be this way.
No. And she was also diagnosed with, well, first she was diagnosed with AG, right?
Yes, correct.
And then she was diagnosed with schizophrenic, was it? Or was it bipolar?
Schizoform disorder. I can't remember the exact word, but it's close to that. Yes. And I think she got the functional neurological disorder
yes.
as well from a really high esteemed institution. But yeah, they, it baffles me how they miss that, because a lumbar puncture, literally a lumbar puncture in an EEG pretty much gave the answers immediately. So I just,
And she's such a lovely person. She's
Oh my gosh. Yes. Love her. It breaks my heart.
It breaks mine. And it's stories like that, that really, really get to me, and frustrating, very frustrating. And you know, you and I had been talking not too long ago about this, that maybe it would be a good idea for some of the doctors, and I know they're busy, I would never want to have their jobs, but to relate a little bit more with the patients, what's going on with them, maybe get involved even under a different name or something into some of the groups, or just listen. They don't have to talk, just listen to what the patients are saying. It's such an eye-opening situation if you actually listen to those patients. And when a patient with a brain disorder goes into a doctor's office, it's again sad, because I'll speak for myself. I would go in, and even if I wrote myself a list, you know, our short-term memory is bad, let's face it. Mine's still bad, but I would write myself a list, bring the list into my fantastic neurologist that I loved. I'd bring that list in and forget I had the list, or I would look at one or two things on that list. And, you know, you can't go in. You should have somebody with you. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. You should have an advocate with you, because it's with a brain damaged person, you know, and that's what we are. You know, we don't, what's the word do I want? Process things fast enough. So another experience I just had was, I was into a neurologist's office, not my lovely lady that diagnosed me, but the neurologist is always in a hurry. He's always busy, busy, busy. And I understand that. I totally get it. But with me, I can't answer quickly. If somebody's going to ask me a question, they need to give me a little bit of time to process it in my brain and get the right words out, or I am not going to give the answer that I should be giving, and not answer for me. You know, I've had them say to me already, oh, you don't have tingling in your feet and your hands. Well, yeah, I have constantly, day in and day out, you know, and by that time I go to correct them, they're onto something else. And my brain does not react that quick.
Yes.
So to me, that's a big issue too, that I think patients that have encephalopathy, especially encephalitis, they need to have some patience with a doctor when they go in, or not, I should say just both ways, I guess. They need to be patient with the doctors. The doctor needs to be patient with them. Yes. But I mean, they got to understand they're not capable. They're not capable.
Yeah, it can be a struggle for some of those, and to remember things. And
how many times have you walked out and said, dang, why did I say that?
Right? Yes. Or I try to make a notes on my phone and stuff, but there's always stuff that I'm like, oh yeah, I was gonna, like, even if I make a list of things to talk about, I'll think about something that I missed or whatever, of course after the appointment, but
usually when I get in the car.
yes it's like you sit down in the car seat and then boom, now the memory comes to you.
Yeah. And when I was in the process of getting diagnosed, didn't know what was wrong, I kept journaling every single day.
That's a good idea.
I would
go
in my journal and I would write how I felt, what was going on. Because like I said, I have numerous autoimmune diseases, and it was the only way I could keep track myself. And, you know, I actually sent that right in, brought it right into the doctor's office. I sent it into Social Security. I mean, I needed that journal. And unfortunately, in the last few years, I haven't done it. And I need to do that again, because I'll be starting with some new doctors, and I need to point out that I have this issue, that issue. And by the time you get into a doctor's office, you don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I think journaling for anybody that's got a chronic disease is really important.
Yes, I would agree with that too. Trying to keep track of those symptoms. That's kind of when I was first diagnosed when I was 16. So I was a child and under pediatric care. So my mom actually kept a calendar kind of tracking, you know, when I went on medications, when I went off, you know, if I were to have, I have like seizure like episodes. If I have one of those, she would track that, you know, when I would get infusions, that kind of thing. And it was helpful to see kind of, you know, what's working, what's not working. Cause when you start to get on a lot of medications, it can be hard to figure out what's working and what's not. So I kind of wanted to circle back a little bit, cause I was just thinking about it now. I forgot kind of to ask you, but what were some of the symptoms that you experienced before you were diagnosed with HE?
Good question. There's such a list.
Yes.
Yep. Extreme exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like I was carrying around 500 pound bricks on each foot.
Yes.
I couldn't get myself to get into my vehicle, my car.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't lift my leg up to go over a curbing.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't. I could not do it. I couldn't do stairs. Mm-hmm. I had to literally pull myself with my arms up a stairs. I started to get headaches so bad, I couldn't stand it. They ended up going into like electrical shocks. I don't even know if I can explain it, but it felt like a lightning bolt went through my skull. Mm-hmm. And then they started coming so that I'm actually putting my foot out. You can't see it, but they started like going from my foot all the way up my body into my scalp. It was just like somebody hit me with a bolt of lightning.
Oh, wow.
I got the tremors. I got the jerking. I still jerk. It's terrible. And I take medication for it, but sometimes I feel like I'm in a X-File episode. My whole body ripped off.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's terrible. So then I ended up where, when I really start thinking, maybe there's something wrong with me. I think I touched on, you know, I was working and I couldn't talk. I couldn't get any words.
Yes. Yes.
But I started saying weird things. Like I'd be talking to somebody and I wanted to say the word mirror and I would say window. I would be like replacing the proper name of something with something else that was similar. And I would catch myself and I'm like, what is wrong with me? And then this is terrible, but I used to tell people, I bragged that my memory was so good. And it was, I was like that. If I told you, I thought I was lying. Now that God came back to haunt me on that one.
He said, watch this.
That's right, honey. I'm going to show you.
I totally get that though, because I didn't realize how good my memory was until it was bad. If that makes any sense.
I never forgot anything or anything anybody said or anything. Mm-hmm. I was like right on top of it. Yes. But then all of a sudden my memory, my short-term memory, it was like shocked me. I mean, I wouldn't remember that I even forgot until something presented itself to me. And I realized, oh my God.
Yes.
You know, and obviously when you're cooking or you're baking, I mean, I still to this day have to set a timer. I can't walk out of a kitchen and I will totally forget there's something even in the oven or on the stove. I need to have a constant reminder. I can't, or I'll write something down on a piece of paper and put it in front of me because I'm going to forget. that was a big, big issue for me. Like I said, God got me back before bragging like that. And it was,
he said, oh, that's enough having a good memory here.
You're going to pay, honey.
Yes.
I remember when I first got the Facebook groups and talking with other people, I remember asking others if they had that feeling that their head was numb in the back, mm-hmm. like somebody was pulling a ponytail too tight. And it was amazing how many people had that same feeling. Mm-hmm. It was like the whole back of my skull was numb. Oh, and yeah. It was so strange. It wasn't a headache. It was numbness. And, you know, it was weird. It's very strange. And that feeling, yes. that there's a ponytail being pulled too tight on your head. Mm-hmm. So sensitive. I became allergic to the sun. I don't even think that has anything to do with HE, but mm-hmm. it was all around the same time. And I just had muscle aches so bad. My muscles were weak. Mm-hmm. Of course, it had something to do with myositis also, but yeah. I guess it also has something to do with HE. So my mm-hmm. symptoms are pretty crossed over. But that was just some of them. I know there's a lot more than that, but those are the ones that stick out in my mind the most. That,
yes.
Things that you can't forget.
Yeah, it's so hard to, I think a lot of us have weird, going back to the numbness in your head, have a lot of weird head feelings. And it is very hard. I find it very hard to describe that to people. I get like a burning in my head and it's only on like the right side, typically, sometimes all over, but it's mostly only on the right side. And it sometimes goes down into my neck and in my shoulder. And it's so hard to like describe that to people, or sometimes I just get weird sensations in my head. And yeah, it's like, how do you even,
you can't start
put in the words. No, it's like, unless you've experienced it yourself, you just can't well, you describe like it.
Hypochondriac.
At
the same time, like I said, this is, I don't know what symptoms were exactly HE and what was the other autoimmune diseases.
Yeah.
So forgive me if I'm crossing over the barriers, but at the same time, I started, my shoulders ache, everything ached, my shoulders, mm-hmm. my arms, my thighs, my feet, my knees. I mean, I got weird rashes that were like the whole backside of my body for 9 months. And I would take steroids. They'd give me steroids to clear it up. They'd clear it up for a few days, come right back.
Yes.
weird symptoms, you know, mm-hmm. that real hard to explain to anybody. And like I said, whether or not that one had anything to do with the HE, I don't know. And I did have a positive ANA speckled pattern.
Mm-hmm. What kind of other what kind of tests and what kind of, things did
I went through every blood test. I swear I went into the hospital, get blood tests done. And the lab people had to look them up. They had never heard of them. So that kind of mm-hmm. tells you something. And, I had spinal taps. I had EEG that showed, focal slowing on the left temporal lobe, frontal temporal lobe. I said the spinal taps. I ended up getting muscle biopsies also and nerve biopsies because of the weakness in my body. MRIs, MRAs, CAT scans. I mean, I had the gamut.
Everything. Yeah, I feel like a lot of HE patients kind of go through that, literally trying to find, turning over every stone. Well, hopefully, I guess I should say most people, some people don't get as lucky to have somebody that wants to turn over every stone, but.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when I was diagnosed, I did have that neurologist and my rheumatologist were the two, and they worked together. And
that's fantastic.
They were my saving grace. They really mm-hmm. were. And and I will tell you how I finally got that diagnosis of HE was my neurologist referred me to Northwestern in Chicago.
Yes, I'm familiar.
I always get them confused. And I saw a neurologist there and a rheumatologist there. And the neurologist looked at some all the blood work that I had done. And he said, you know, I think it has something to do with these TPOs, your thyroid antibodies. I'm like, what? So anyway, I went home and he didn't really give me an answer. Went home, went back to my neurologist and she looked at everything. She said, oh my gosh, that's it. That's the missing puzzle piece. I'll never forget her saying that to me.
Oh.
And so she retested me and my antibodies weren't, you know, they were in the thousands. It wasn't like some people have 4,000, 5,000. I mean,
the thousands is still,
that's pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, my antibodies weren't, you know, sky high, but they said to point to a diagnosis, it just has to be above normal. So I guess having it into the thousands kind of gave her the answer she was looking for. And when she did retest them, they were the same. They were high.
Yes.
So, I was surprised. I never heard of it. In fact, when they called and told me what the diagnosis was, I was like, what?
Like gazootite. Cause I still struggle to even like spell that. Encephalopathy. And yeah, it's like, what on earth is that?
And what gets me sometimes is that I don't know how many people have said to me before, oh yeah, I have that, or oh my,
yeah,
my cousin has that. And I'd get my hopes up, right? Oh really? And it comes out they've got Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is, we all know, is not the same.
Yeah. Little,
but trying little to different. Explain that to people.
Yeah. It's hard. The name is not great. It doesn't, it doesn't serve,
and
very well.
That gets us back to the same old thing about, the diagnosis in itself and people not recognizing it or controversy or whatever that is, you know, even if they want to rename us,
Yes, that would be
seronegative or something. But
yeah, and I think, like you said, a lot of people are it's being overdiagnosed, which I agree with you too. But I don't think that means nothing is going on. I think, you know, it's very close. Like in my case, I was originally diagnosed with Hashimoto's encephalopathy. You know, after going through all that kind of testing, like you did. And I recently have gone to a new neurologist who is really well-versed in autoimmune encephalitis. And she was able to find, you know, an antibody. There were antibodies in my CSF. So that, you know, it still, you know, I still had a form of autoimmune encephalitis. It was just a different than what we first thought, but it, I actually have TPO antibodies in my spinal fluid and GAD65 antibodies. So it also brings up the question of, okay, so people with TPO antibodies in their spinal fluid, why are they there? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it even if just another marker of inflammation, if they don't really actively have a role, or we can't figure out, you know, what they're doing in there, it still seems to be a marker of neuroinflammation in the context of, you know, all these other things. So yeah, it's hard. It's not nothing. It's not. And it's, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that paper that I found recently and I sent to you, a new research article, and found it very interesting where they kind of grouped that GAD65 in with the TPO's diagnosis.
Yeah, it's more of a non-specific marker.
Yes, and that was quite an interesting article, I thought. Some new thoughts coming out on things. Hopefully HESA can find somebody that feels bad for us and
Wants yeah, to be if anybody's listening and is interested in the research,
we'll fund you. I promise. We'll
yes.
Just help us out. That's all I care about. And even if it's not in my lifetime, since I'm getting old, it's you know, I don't care when we would find it, as long as somebody's working on it and can get some answers for everybody.
Yes, there needs to be answers. That's the important thing. Is yeah, we need to answer, like I said earlier, we need to answer the why and not the yes or no, it exists. The why is this happening? So
exactly right, Maddie. 100%. Yep.
So I guess kind of to, you know, come to a close in our conversation, I want to know if you have any words of wisdom, or if you have any final thoughts about, you know, if you have any thoughts about final thoughts about that subject, or just, you know, for people dealing with HE in general, you know, what kind of final words do you have?
Well, I probably shouldn't get back on my soapbox about the researching of HE, but I'll beg if I have to. But I will say that people who are diagnosed with any form of autoimmune encephalitis or any type of rare disease or chronic disease, I find the answer is to find a reason, find something to do that makes you feel good. You may not be able to do what you used to do. You may not be that person that you used to look at the mirror at and say, oh, you know, I know her. Now you look and you don't recognize yourself anymore. But that doesn't mean that you're not valuable. You are. You're a valuable asset to life, to other people. You have information to give. You've got your journey to give to other people that might help someone get diagnosed somewhere along the line. I don't care if it's an autoimmune encephalitis. I don't care if it's lupus. I don't care what it is, mm-hmm. but your knowledge that and what you've gone through is going to help somebody else. So find a purpose, even if it's, you know, write your story, put it out there, advocate for people. I think that's so important. And when I was first diagnosed, this is just something so simple, and we had already started HESS on the book, but I was getting IVIG and I had it done in a cancer center. And I would watch these cancer patients and my heart would just sink. Mm-hmm. And I would feel fortunate, honestly, my diagnosis was what it was. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what can I do to cheer them up? They, you know, they always had these hats that people crocheted and gave to the women, the cancer patients. And I thought, you know, I like to make jewelry. And I thought, I can make them jewelry. I can make them earrings so that they can wear earrings with those hats. Yes. So I did. I brought racks of earrings into the cancer center. And it made me, again, it was a sense of purpose. I had something that I could do that could give to somebody else. And I think,
absolutely,
I think that's just so important to make anybody with a chronic illness feel there's a reason. And I know I've said this before, but it's a reason to get up in the morning and feel good about yourself.
Yes. I totally agree with that. And like you said, just with like sharing your story and then, you know, me getting involved with HESA very much absolutely gave me a purpose. And yeah, like I said earlier, you know, being my age at 24 and seeing everybody else going about their life and I'm still, you know, dealing with this, it does give me a purpose and and being able to do all this cool stuff to help other people that are going through the same thing, or to make sure that people don't go through, you know, the difficult process that it is sometimes to get to this diagnosis.
It can be a lonely journey and depressing. And that's, I think, where you need to find that one certain thing that you can do that's going to make yourself feel better you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be doing something for someone else, but just something, even if you're an artist or you're whatever you can do, it doesn't matter. But whatever you can do to help, even if you just want to listen to somebody else, be there, be that person that has that somebody else's ear, and they, you know, you can, that's so important in itself to have other people know they can talk to you.
And, absolutely,
you know, you understand. So yeah, that would be my really words of wisdom that I have. So
search for Maddie, a purpose. Yeah.
Maddie, let me just say, you've been such an
ass. Oh, don't talk about me. This is talking about you.
if people only knew the story behind me asking you to be vice president, it would be a funny story in itself. But let me just say this before we close is, the first day I met Maddie, the very first day at the symposium, I asked her if she would be part of HESA. She impressed me so much. A lovely person, a lovely soul. Truthfully, that's the truth. And so we are so grateful to you. So just so you know.
Well, you have to know that it goes both ways, because I absolutely, first of all, when I went to that symposium, I didn't realize that you and, you know, a couple other people, you guys had never even met each other until the symposium, but you guys all organized that symposium without ever having met each other.
Yep.
I was like, how amazing is that? I just think that's incredible. And I just think I so look up to you. I hope to be Susan Foley when I grow up. And I
cut
just like, no. I just think what you've done for so many people is incredible. Just with HESA and the book was life-changing for me and just helped everybody around me understand, which is huge, because it's such a I don't know. It's stressful when people don't understand, because it's very Maddie, hard to understand. So
you're going to be the next executive director when I step down. So don't just hang on there.
I got big shoes to fill. I'll say that.
No, HESA couldn't do that again. So. I'm not one worried, and I don't say that very lightly. You know that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But thank you for sharing your story. Because yes, like you said, it's so important to share your story, because you have no idea who it's going to help. Might be, you know, might feel a little less crazy through your story. So,
And I'll just say, goodbye. But on that, I will say thank you, Maddie.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. It was so nice talking to you.
Bye now.
Bye.
For more information on Hashimoto's encephalopathy, autoimmune encephalitis, or HESA, visit our website at www.hesaonline.info.